was just going to share fairly briefly on just some things I had been challenged by, I think challenged by is the right word, in the book of Nehemiah. We've been going through Ezra on Friday nights, and I kept going into the book of Nehemiah once I had finished reading through Ezra. And the theme of what I was going to share about was just some examples from Nehemiah's leadership and his character. And just I see, quite frankly, a lot of the testimony of a new covenant leader in the way that Nehemiah led. And I think for us, and how we can take this and apply it to our lives, I think there's a spectrum. I think those who have been entrusted with a responsibility of leadership, be it in the church or in the families, can really take some of this to heart and say, am I walking in the examples I see here and in the areas where I've been given a stewardship to lead? And I think even if we don't necessarily see those examples or places to apply in our lives, I just think there's an example of being a godly servant here and putting others' interests first that I think can apply to each and every one of us, young and old. And I think in looking at these verses, I hope that some of these lessons that we can learn from Nehemiah can come out from that. So I'm going to just start in Nehemiah chapter 1 and just touch on, I think, about five or six different sections through the first few chapters of the book that I thought called out or made some of the character that God had put in Nehemiah, it really made it obvious. So it starts in Nehemiah chapter 1, verse 3. It says, "They said to me, 'The remnant there in the province who survived the captivity are in great distress and reproach, and the wall of Jerusalem is broken down, and its gates are burned with fire.' When I heard these words, I sat down and wept and mourned for days, and I was in fasting and praying before the God of heaven." And I think what I took from this is I think we need a little bit of perhaps context for Nehemiah's life right now, right? Because at the end of this chapter, we realize that Nehemiah is actually a cupbearer to King Artaxerxes. And we don't know much of what that would look like, but I believe this is a position of prominence. He was before one of the most powerful men in the world on a regular occasion. I suspect he was dining at King Artaxerxes' table. I'm sure he lived in some residences that the king had provided for his personal servants. Like Nehemiah, in my opinion, on the outside, had a very good life going in Babylon. Like he was a prominent leader in the country there, and Babylon was a wealthy nation. So Nehemiah was living in comfort, and it would seem to some almost that captivity had been good to Nehemiah. He had really found a way, and because of his leadership and because of his integrity, he'd really been given an opportunity to prosper here in Babylon. And yet Nehemiah's heart was not in Babylon. Nehemiah's heart was not in his own prosperity. Nehemiah's heart was in the people of God and their prosperity and the people of and God's testimony in the earth, which was centered around, at the time, the city of Jerusalem and the nation of Israel. And Nehemiah, despite all that was going good for him in Babylon, was very troubled when he heard about the state of the remnant that was left in back in the province of Judah and Jerusalem. And he was also very troubled by the state of the city of Jerusalem, which was associated, in my opinion, with God's name in the earth at that point. We could say I would parallel it to the church. Like it was associated with where God's name was associated and his honor. And he was really troubled at its state. And when he heard about that, it brought him to a place where he wept and mourned and fasted for days. And I was just like, for me, it was a great challenge to say, like, is that my concern? Like, am I concerned about God's people? Am I concerned about their spiritual state? And does it trouble me? Like, if everything else is going good in my life, if I've got a lot of comfort going on and having a lot of wonderful things on the outside, does that distract me? Does that take me to a place where because of that comfort, I'm not that troubled if I maybe see a little bit of sin creeping in my own life or maybe in the life of my family or in us as a body? I'm an elder here, as most of you know. Am I troubled if I see, you know what? Maybe I sense some of the youth's heart is getting hard. Maybe I sense some of my brothers and sisters' hearts are getting a little bit hard. Maybe there's sin creeping in, and I know of some who have begun stumbling in areas where they once had victory. What's my attitude? Am I comfortable because, you know what? We're going to California next year or next month, and it's going to be wonderful, and I'm not against vacations. I would love to go to California, but frankly, we're not. But is that my attitude? Like, is that my compass? Like, you know what? Things are comfortable here. Hey, we're healthy, and our new baby's healthy. It's awesome. Or is my compass, do I have a heart that God has that says, you know what? The Lord is troubled. The Lord is troubled if he sees young people's hearts getting hard. The Lord is troubled if he sees brothers and sisters who once had victory in an area of their life start to lose that victory, start to begin to stumble in sin again. That is troubling to him. And do I share that burden? Do I share that burden that our body here meeting together would be a testimony that brings glory to God in Abbotsford? Is that a burden for me, or am I troubled if our testimony is rather a broken down city without walls and people are stumbling and families are troubled or other things? Like, what is my burden? Is that my burden? And I see that for Nehemiah, despite living in a lot of comfort and having things going very well for him in Babylon, he was very burdened when he heard about the state of the remnant of the people and the state of Jerusalem. And I was challenged by that. Then if we go to chapter 2, he already knows he's going to go before Artaxerxes, because it kind of highlights that at the end of chapter 1. But he gets in front of King Artaxerxes in verse 2. It says, "So the king said to me, 'Why is your face sad, though you are not sick? This is nothing but sadness of heart.' Then I was very afraid." Skip to verse 5, because the king asked him what's going on. "I said to the king, 'If it please the king, and if your servant has found favor before you, send me to Judah, to the city of my father's tombs, that I may rebuild it.'" And I like this thing for two reasons. I think one thing is very encouraging to see that a man given a burden by God and knowing, I think, perhaps that God had a calling on his life, he was still afraid. He still had to go in front of the king and make a request. And what did he do? He didn't once again look to his own interests. He didn't once again shrink back from what God was putting on his heart. He was willing to take that risk. He was willing to take the risk of appearing sad in front of the king, which is not a light thing. This is the most powerful man in the world, and he seems very kind towards Nehemiah here. But I can assure you, the king of Babylon was not a man who was thought of as a kind, benevolent king. He was a harsh ruler, and he ruled with an iron fist. That's how you preserve your kingdom in those days. And Nehemiah was afraid when the king saw him as sad, but he was willing to say, you know what? I'm adding to it here. But his attitude was, you know what? What is it? What is my value here? What is the benefit if I just cover this up and bury this burden in my heart? I'd rather take a risk and let the king know what's in my heart. Let him know why I'm sad. And what's more, perhaps the king will have mercy on me and let me do something about this. Because it says at the end of chapter 1, he's saying in verse 11, "O Lord, I beseech you, may your ear be attentive to the prayer of your servant and the prayer of your servants who delight to revere your name. And make your servant successful today and grant him compassion before this man." So he knew he was going before Artaxerxes to make a request. He knew that this was the direction it was going to go. And he was asking God for help, for mercy, that he would be able to see and present something to Artaxerxes that touched Artaxerxes and allowed him to go and do something about this thing that he had a burden for. And so I was just encouraged that once again, he's living in luxury. He's living in all of this comfort, but he puts his comfort aside and, quite frankly, takes on risk. It was no benefit to him directly in taking on this risk, but it was a great benefit and a great opportunity that he saw to help the people of God, to see Jerusalem rebuilt. And he, just like we read the story of Esther, it doesn't say it here, but in Esther we hear those words, "Maybe for such a time as this, you were put into this very position of blessing. And he took that and said exactly the same, that perhaps all of this blessing I have of being a cupbearer to the king and all that I've been given here in Babylon is for this purpose, that I can go before the king and make a request for the city of Jerusalem and the people of Israel, that we could see them, see the city rebuilt and see the people who are in great distress helped. And he was willing to take a risk to do that. So now let's skip ahead. We're going to go. He travels back. And I think let's go to verse chapter 2, verse 18. Actually, we'll start in verse 17. So prior to this, he'd gotten there and done an inspection of the city, and he hadn't come in. I don't know exactly why he did things the way he did, but he certainly came in to me with a seeming sense of humility. He didn't come in there and sort of say, "Hey, I was the king's cupbearer, and I've been God's going to use me to rebuild the city and stuff like that." He came in there and actually went around and did an inspection of the city by night. He did it in private. He didn't allow people to know his purpose. And he also didn't immediately make it obvious by walking. He could have said, I didn't tell people his purpose, but he could have gone around and been inspecting everything in the middle of the day and people could have figured out why he was doing it. But he chose not to do that. Instead, he did it at night. But the one thing I can say and I can see about this is it still aligns with the burden he was given. He heard when he was back in Babylon about the fact that the city was burned down. He heard that people were in great distress. And when he got there, he intended and made it his purpose to find out the details of that. And I see, again, a parallel to how we care for one another. He's got a burden, and then he continues to dive deeper. He continues to invest in figuring out what's going wrong. What's the true state of the situation here? And he went out at night and looked into that. And I don't know why he did it in private, but I'm sure there's maybe a revelation we could have there about serving one another and beginning to understand a situation. And because we care about somebody, inspecting and making the effort to know what's going on before we immediately start taking action on it. But after he'd done that inspection, he said in verse 17, he said, "Then I said to them, you see the bad situation we are in, that Jerusalem is desolate and its gates are burned with fire. Come, let us rebuild the wall of Jerusalem so that we will no longer be a reproach. And I told them how the hand of my God had been favorable to me and how also about the king's words which he had spoken to me. Then they said, let us arise and build. So they put their hands to the good work." So what I see here is that Nehemiah is now, because of his care and because of the steps he's taken, actually able to pass on some encouragement, pass on some inspiration to those people there who are, as it said in chapter 1, in great distress and a reproach. All of a sudden he comes there and shares this amazing vision, in my opinion, like quite a phenomenal thing, that they're going to see the walls of Jerusalem rebuilt. And the people buy into it. People are actually encouraged by it. And I think that if we look at that in reflecting how we can apply this to the new covenant, apply this to our own lives, I mean, it is an amazing thing when we are able to pass on encouragement to one another. Remember this, there's a brother I often listen to on the internet and stuff like that, and it's come through, it's definitely in my heart. Like, it is so easy to pass on discouragement. Discouragement spreads like COVID, I'll tell you that. It's worse than COVID. It spreads so quickly and easily, but encouragement does not spread like that. Encouragement is something that if the Lord helps us, if we have an ability, because we care about somebody and because we have a burden to see something fixed, if we have a burden to see somebody built up and encouraged, to see that pass on, that is a great blessing of the Lord. And I think it usually most often comes because we ourselves have borne that burden. We've made, allowed our heart, allowed our lives to invest in caring about people. That's where encouragement can come from. It doesn't typically come from just parachuting into a situation and just thinking somehow we can just pop into a person's life and pass on some encouragement to them. Most often it comes because people know we care, because there's been an investment, because there's been, just like Nehemiah went and understood the situation. It's very easy to discount encouragement somebody tries to give you if they can immediately see that you don't actually have a clue what's going on in their life. Like, how encouraging is that going to be if somebody comes and drops a few verses on you, but they don't actually know what's going on in your life and don't actually know how things have been challenging for you? Encouragement is passed on when we understand the situation. We've been willing to make the investment in people's lives to understand truly what's going on. And it's time, it's understanding, it's caring. And when we've made that kind of investment, and then we share some hope, then we share something of a promise of what God can do, then all of a sudden, those who are needing encouragement, needing to be built up, can say, yes, let's arise and build. Let's arise and build. And I can tell you, even just from my own life, and this goes back many, many years, but I can tell you the one opportunity, probably the most prominent opportunity I can think of in my own life, where I've seen a brother encouraged and built up from a place of despair to encouragement, it came through just many, many weeks of spending time together. It didn't seem all that spiritual. It didn't seem all that, wasn't like I came in there with some great revelation from God or able to necessarily build up to the scriptures, but it just came through consistent encouragement and fellowship and just being willing to be there for the person. And it produced a transformation in that person's life. And I can think of other situations in my life where that, again, has come about. Where for when I'm there, it feels like, what good is this even doing? We can be in that situation where we're trying to build up, or we're trying to care for others. It can almost feel like, what good am I doing? Because you don't see the change. But I'm telling you, in my life, my testimony is that over the course of time, of consistent, intentional fellowship, and it's not just fellowship to sit there and maybe tell a person it's okay to stay in the place they're at, but it's also fellowship that doesn't say, my caring for you is dependent on you changing. It says, my caring for you, I'm here with you, I'm going to be with you, but just know that I want to see you built up, but I'm not here sitting here, and if you don't turn around in the next week or so, I'm out. It's consistent investment in people's lives, and we can then see a change come through that. And when we have something encouraging to share, the response can be, if God blesses it, that they would say also, let us arise and build. So they put their hands to the good work. And I was just challenged by that, and especially reflecting on my own life as we get busier, and I've got a family that I need to invest in my own family now and stuff. But I also was just reflecting on some of these times, how the Lord has used that investment to bring to a place where all of a sudden the point does come where the person decides and says, yes, I want to build too. I want to see God do a work in my life, and I want to change. And what's most important, I believe I can change. I believe God can do something for me and help me. So it's the next chapter. I'm not going to read it, but it's just really encouraging. It's all these names and stuff. But if you read through it, you just read how all of these people who were there, it wasn't just Nehemiah now, all of these people were encouraged by this servant leader who came there because he had a burden for them. All of a sudden, they're all building together, and so much more than what Nehemiah could accomplish on his own is getting done. And I just liked some of how I heard some of it. Some people are willing to build. Some people are willing to build the wall sections that don't really benefit them. They're actually building over in areas, doesn't really say that it has anything to do with them, but they go and build there. Others just build right in front of their house. And I think that's great too. Like, you know what? As the Lord helps us and as the Lord, like building right in front of your house. Well, what does that kind of look like? Well, that's just a direct, you know what? I'm burdened for my family and I'm just going to build right here. I know it'd be great if I could go build this section over here that benefits others. But for right now, I'm just building right in front of my house. And you know what? That is great too. The wall is going up. The Jerusalem wall, the church is getting strengthened if we just invest right in front of our houses and start building. Others may be given a calling to go build elsewhere that aren't directly right in front of their house. That's wonderful too. But a lot of these families, as it talks about, built right in front of their houses, which is just fine. And they're all encouraged and inspired to build together. So now I'll move to Nehemiah chapter 5. Nehemiah chapter 5, verse 5, it says they're starting to discourage the builders, and Nehemiah is very troubled about that. He says, do not forgive their iniquity and let their sin be blotted out before you, for they have demoralized the builders. So Nehemiah was very troubled. He was very concerned as a leader when people were coming in and trying to discourage those who were building. And how did he respond? He said, we prayed to our God, and because of them, we set up a guard against them day and night. So now they start actually taking up weapons. And we know that with the weapons in the New Covenant, the weapons of the Spirit are mighty for tearing down of strongholds. And so in this building, in this leadership, in this caring for one another, they've now set up a guard, and they're standing guard day and night. So you can let that apply and see how that would speak to you. But I just see people who care enough to be there in the daytime, the nighttime, prayer, the word of the Spirit, shield of faith, all of these things. They have these weapons, and they're applying them day and night. And then later on, it says in verse 23, it says, "So neither I, my brothers, or my servants, nor the men of the guard who followed me, none of us removed our clothes. Each of us took his weapon, even to the water." So Nehemiah was constantly concerned, constantly caring for the people who were there. As a leader, there was no off time for him. He was willing to accept that, you know what? In my life, I'm on guard all the time. That is my burden, is to see this wall built, and I'm going to be standing guard constantly. And so I'm just going to close here in chapter 6. The wall has now been built. Nehemiah has been appointed to a position of leadership again. But it says in chapter 6, verse 14, "For 12 years, neither I nor my kinsmen have eaten the governor's food allowance." Because the governor's food allowance, if you read through the preceding chapters, would have come from taking it from the Jews who were there, from the Israelites who was there. It wasn't like Artaxerxes was going to send something. He would have taken it from the people who were there. He says, "But the former governors who were before me laid burdens on the people and took from them bread and wine and 40 shekels of silver. But I did not do so because of the fear of God. I also applied myself to the work on this wall. We did not buy any land. All my servants were gathered there for the work." So Nehemiah took this burden, and throughout 12 years, he never got distracted into somehow thinking that, you know what, maybe the people owed him something and that maybe he should be able to have a little bit of something from the people. He continued for 12 years until the wall was built and completed, to just walk as a servant, to walk as a leader, to have the priority of this burden. He didn't lose this burden for seeing Jerusalem built up. He never went there and decided that it was time for others to start serving him. His whole time there, he led as a servant and did not look to his own interests. And what happened? The wall was built. God's will was fulfilled. And quite frankly, it was a miracle that this actually happened. And if you read the next chapter when the wall was built, it says that all of the nations that were surrounding them were disheartened, because they saw that God was in this work. So if we want to see a work of God in our church, in our families, etc., this kind of servant leadership is the path to seeing that happen. And there was a testimony built up because of his leadership and because of the way that others bought in and were participating in the work, that all around could see that God's hand was in the rebuilding of the wall.